it's in the middle of the day or night, because I need to introduce you to shell space. We all want a little more time and space. Move at shell's pace to shell space. International Nomadic Gallery Online Magazine Radio and more. Shellspace.com. No. .xyz. Stay. Float. Refresh. Print something. Fun. Make coffee. Amazing. And there's an Instagram. _ shell space on Instagram. Nomadic Unprinted Magazine.
Nicole Eisenman at the Tipping Point. This article is by Zachary Small and read by an automated voice. In the basement of an old museum, the artist Nicole Eisenman grabbed a cordless hacksaw and started demolishing the past. It was a scorching morning in June, and Eisenman was excavating a mischievous mural sealed for decades behind a wall of the former Whitney Museum on Madison Avenue, where it had caused such a sensation at the 1995 biennial. It was a panoramic Bichon vision of the museum's destruction, where everything from Hopper paintings to Warhol prints had been crushed, and the institution's president left unconscious. Only Eisenman's artwork, exploded Whitney, was left standing at ground zero. Now Eisenman was methodically reducing the chaotic mural to rubble, but there was another scene of destruction that most art historians have overlooked in the retelling of how Eisenman became one of the most important painters of Generation X. Splayed across the foot of the 30-foot-wide painting is a self-portrait of the artist dying, an allusion to Eisenman's past struggles with heroin addiction. Eisenman, who is 59, gender-fluid, and often uses they-them pronouns, kept these struggles with drugs a secret from the public for nearly three decades, most of their art career, but is now ready to reveal that they created the mural at one of their lowest points during a sleepless week at the beginning of drug treatment. Look closely above and to the right. It's a portrait of the doctor Ann Bordwine Beter, who the artist said provided life-saving care. Touching the mural for the first time in nearly 30 years, Eisenman recalled the day a biennial curator visited their Brooklyn studio, where he surely would have seen drugs on a drawing desk. "Don't know if he entirely trusted me," Eisenman said, starting the hacksaw. "That might have been smart." The artist smirked before guiding the rotating blades down onto the mural like a guillotine. Demolition continued for several hours. Pushing back on politics. Eisenman hopes that shattering personal history will spark creativity. Debris from the mural is being reconfigured into a new work, a sculpture, crowned by a portion of the painting that features another self-portrait of the artist, on a scaffold, continuing to draw on the last untouched wall of the exploded Whitney Museum. I look back and see that I was drawing myself in my world, which was breaking down, Eisenman said during a coffee break at the demolition. At the time, it just felt like a funny joke. Eisenman flinched with discomfort, admitting that an overwhelming sense of pressure had returned since they became a vocal supporter of Palestinian liberation and a ceasefire. That position put them at odds with some longtime collectors, who Eisenman said had urged the artist to remain silent about the Israel-Hamas war and threatened to sell off their paintings if they didn't retract pro-Palestinian support. One collector emailing Eisenman was Martin Eisenberg, an heir to the Bed Bath & Beyond fortune, who questioned their decision to sign the letter. It is not anything that I will forget, Eisenman said, of the feeling of being threatened by people who I had thought of as allies in the art world. The blowback came last fall, when Eisenman and hundreds of other artists signed a letter published in Art Forum magazine that called for an immediate ceasefire but failed to initially condemn the October 7th massacre of Israelis. A point that was later included in an update. Seeing what pain the letter had caused, Eisenman removed their signature but didn't change their stance on Palestine. The publication later fired its top editor, David Velasco, because of the letter. He was a close friend of Eisenman's, so the artist responded by announcing that they would stop working with the prestigious magazine because it appeared to have censored political opinions. We are being judged as artists because of our politics. Eisenman said, if you are too far left or progressive, especially on issues of Palestine, then you are entering a politically dangerous place. So Eisenman is doing what they do best, painting the world into a corner. Nearing 60 years old, the artist is experiencing a mid-career renaissance with an acclaimed retrospective at the Museum of Contemporary Art Chicago through September 22nd. A current solo exhibition at Hausa and Wirth in Paris. And an upcoming commission, Fixed Crane, at Madison Square Park beginning on October 24th that will bring a decommissioned 1969 industrial crane crashing down in Eisenman's biggest sculpture work to date. Money buys artworks, not artists. The art critic Barry Schwabsky has described Eisenman as a painter of modern life, borrowing a phrase from the poet Charles Baudelaire, to describe a once-in-a-generation talent. The artist, who was born in France of German-Jewish descent and lives in Brooklyn, is less precious, saying that after graduating from the Rhode Island School of Design in 1987, their early career was defined by ribald, nasty, dirty little drawings that included a tuna fish admiring a woman's scent and orgy participants distracted by video games. Eisenman, who identifies as queer, was pulling jokes from New York's downtown lesbian scene of the 1990s, while finding cultural influences everywhere, from newspaper comics to the 16th century Dutch landscapes of Peter Bruegel. The references were so arcane that Eisenman could renovate them into a contemporary style, Within a decade, Eisenman transformed the painterly tradition of allegories into alaores that put a feminist twist on scenes inside beer gardens and bedrooms and infused them with absurdist critique, burlesque eroticism, and self-mockery. In 2015, Eisenman won a Genius Fellowship from the MacArthur Foundation for expanding the expressive potential of the figurative tradition in works that engage contemporary social issues and restore cultural significance to the representation of the human form. Eisenman's career accelerated with a solo exhibition at the New Museum the following year, and a celebrated turn toward sculpture, complete with a park fountain in Germany, and another breakout hit at the 2019 Whitney Biennial called Procession, which included a seated figure flipped forward so he was capable of intermittently releasing misty farts into the air. But while the sculpture was upstairs earning praise for its audacity, Eisenman was downstairs raising hell with several other artists who boycotted the Whitney Museum. The artists marched alongside protesters, calling for the institution's vice chairman, Warren B. Kanders, to resign because his company was involved in producing tear gas and other military supplies. When Kanders stepped down from his position 2 months later, Eisenman saw what was possible through activism. Eisenman's paintings have always included hot-button issues like gender, sexuality, money, and guns, but Eisenman described himself as more of an observer than a participant until the Black Lives Matter movement and later, George Floyd's murder by a Minneapolis policeman, which led to the artist's mobilization. Recent paintings bring those politics to eye level. The Abolitionists in the Park was quickly acquired by the Metropolitan Museum of Art after the painting's completion in 2022. It captured the scene of an actual event, Occupy City Hall, an encampment at City Hall Park in 2020 in Manhattan, when protesters called for drastic cuts to the New York City Police Department's budget. Under a darkened sky illuminated by a glowing orb ripped from Van Gogh's Starry Night, the painting includes more than 30 figures camping on blue tarps and chewing on pizza. Other painters are so psychological, Eisenman said. When I asked about their approach, someone like Dana Schutz is fantastic because she is painting with her eyes closed, Eisenman said of the artist known for gestural painting and distorted bodies. Everything you see on the canvas is pure emotion, and you get to see what's going on inside her head. The artist briefly paused and winked. I paint with one eye open. One of Eisenman's newest artworks distills their recent experience with the challenge of making political art, Archangel, The Visitors, which is currently on view at Hausa and Wirth in Paris. Imagines a scene where Eisenman pickpockets a collector underneath the crushing gaze of a pig-headed soldier sculpture hanging from the ceiling. The sculpture featured in the painting refers to Prussian Archangel, made by John Hartfield and Rudolf Schlichter for the 1920 International Dada Fair in Berlin as a critique of German militarism. Eisenman's painting is supposed to remind collectors that money buys artworks. Not artists. I would say there are only a handful of collectors that I have sat down with and had dinner, said Eisenman, explaining the difficult trapeze act of critiquing elites who may one day become patrons. I don't want to know them. But preserving the integrity of one's artwork requires sacrifices. For example, the Museum of Contemporary Art Chicago's mid-career Eisenman survey, What Happened, will ultimately result in a financial loss for the institution, because collectors that otherwise might have supported the exhibition opposed the artist's statements about Palestine. It became clear they would not necessarily be the underwriters of the show. Madeline Grinstein, the museum's director, said, "It was financially a loss, but we did not in any way diminish the show as a result." Grinstein said there was a moral imperative to show nearly 100 of Eisenman's artworks, which the museum intentionally displayed during the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. To present a queer person's perspective on the world, the director said. The exhibition was ultimately able to attract other donors, including the Vancouver-based art collector and real estate businessman Bob Rennie, to help float the budget. I want to say that these are complex times to be both a private citizen and a public person. Grinstein said during a toast at the exhibition's opening in April, "Connection is what I see when I look at Nicole's paintings. Their works propose new kinds of social arrangements. Generating that sense of connection is not spontaneous. It has been nurtured and sustained." Schwabsky, the art critic, said that it was Eisenman's outstanding skill and outspoken nature that insulated them from a career-defeating blowback to their politics. A less-known artist might well be canceled for taking those positions. He said, adding that Eisenman was in a fortunate position that allows a certain imperviousness. Birkenstocks and nipple rings. Before sending an industrial crane hurtling into the grounds of New York's Tone East Park, Eisenman needed practice. The artist headed upstate one early morning in August for a meeting with a structural engineer and officials from the nonprofit Madison Square Park Conservancy. who started planning the commission almost 3 years ago as the grand finale to the 20th anniversary celebration of its public art program. Forget the yawning divide between art and life, wrote Kamin Rapoport, the park's artistic director and chief curator said. Some people are going to see a toppled crane and think about the development and fall of industry. Some people are going to wonder why there is an extinct machine poised in the middle of this urban garden, and others are going to know the reference to Marcel Duchamp's ready-mades. Visitors will have the option of walking around the toppled crane's 90-foot length or sitting atop its counterweight. Additional sculptural elements include a figure resembling a flag of surrender above the crane's overturned cab, a purple nipple ring fixed to its boom, and a bronze Birkenstock sandal-wearing foot tripping up the machine's treads. I made this proposal not thinking for a second that it would happen. Eisenman said, watching the sculpture being lifted into the air by men operating two cranes in a mechanic's pas de deux. As the strangely poetic scene played out above their heads, Eisenman contemplated what it meant to dissemble and reassemble the crane as sculpture. To use space is to destroy space, the artist concluded. Destruction and construction are two sides of the same coin. That conversation returned Eisenman to thinking about the remnants of the Whitney Museum mural that were moved to the artist's studio in Brooklyn. In time, the rubble will become a new sculpture, evoking a monument to that same destruction and reconstruction that has defined Eisenman's turbulent life. But at least the artist can laugh about those difficult times. Back in the Whitney Museum basement with the broken remains of their famous mural, Eisenman showed me a satirical video that the artist Ryan McNamara produced for the Survey exhibition in Chicago. It is a comedic roast of the artist's mural paintings, which ends on the exploded Whitney. McNamara pretends to be the newscaster who appears in the painting at far right, surveying the damage at a museum he refers to as the Blitney Flusium of Slomerican Court. The camera pans across Eisenman's magnum opus as McNamara appraises the destroyed masterpieces, the Pollock pulverized, the Flavin flattened, the Lewitt leveled, Smithson smashed, Judd jammed, Stella stricken, Twombly twisted. But somehow, he said in the exaggerated New Yorkie accent of a veteran reporter, Eisenman, Nicole Eisenman, has come out unscathed.
Science and technology.
Medicine. Liquid gold. Breast milk contains a dizzying array of ingredients. Some could treat cancer and other diseases.
In a talk she gave in 2016, Katie Hind, a biologist from Arizona State University, lamented how little scientific attention was commanded by breast milk. Up until that point, she said, both wine and tomatoes had been far more heavily studied. 8 years on, alas, that remains true. What is also true, and this was the serious point of Dr. Hine's talk, is that scientists have been neglecting a gold mine. Unlike wine or tomatoes, breast milk's physiological properties have been honed by evolution to be healthy. In babies, it can reduce inflammation. Kill pathogens and improve the health of the immune system. As a result, some components of breast milk are now being studied as potential treatment for a host of adult conditions, including cancer, heart disease, arthritis, and irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS. Scientists may never look at breast milk in the same way again. The exact composition of breast milk remains slightly mysterious. After water, its most abundant components are lactose, fatty compounds known as lipids, and sugar molecules called human milk oligosaccharides, or HMOs. But it also contains a host of proteins, vitamins and minerals, enzymes, hormones, and live cells from the mother's body. Its richness continues to surprise. In 2009, for example, more than 250 previously unknown proteins were identified within it. In 2015, it yielded up 300 new microRNA molecules, which regulate gene expression throughout the body. There is lots of room for discoveries. Says Megan Azad at the University of Manitoba in Canada. In a recent study of milk from 1,200 mothers on three continents, Dr. Azad and her colleagues found roughly 50,000 small molecules, most of them unknown to science. By using artificial intelligence, or AI, models to analyse this list of ingredients and link them to detailed health data on babies and their mothers, they hope to identify components beneficial for specific aspects of babies' development. Such work would add much-needed rigour to the field. At present, identifying which of these myriad components to study often occurs at random. In one case, doctors noticed that preterm babies who are fed breast milk, as opposed to formula, had dramatically lower incidence of necrotizing enterocolitis, or NEC, an often fatal disease in which intestinal tissue becomes inflamed and dies. That observation prompted research on whether any specific components in breast milk could be conferring this protection. HMOs, which are known to have anti-inflammatory effects, may be partly responsible. That has led to the idea that HMOs could be used as therapeutics for diseases that involve inflammation. In a study in mice published in 2021, Lars Boder at the University of California, San Diego, and his colleagues reported that one HMO reduced the development of atherosclerosis, the blockage of arteries that leads to heart attack and stroke. Dr. Boder says that in other experiments with mice, the results of which are yet to be published, HMOs have shown promise in treating arthritis and multiple sclerosis. Clinical trials with humans will be far more expensive. other discoveries have come about by happenstance. In 1995, scientists at Lund University in Sweden reported a discovery they had stumbled upon while studying breast milk's antimicrobial properties. They added some of its constituents to a dish containing lung cancer cells, hoping to see them fend off bacteria. Instead, remarkably, the cancer cells died off. The culprit was a molecule that they named Hamlet, formed when two ingredients in breast milk, alpha-lactalbumin, a protein, and oleic acid, combined. Since then, the research team led by Katarina Svanborg has been assessing Hamlet's potential as a cancer treatment. The molecules work their magic by entering the nuclei of cancer cells and reprogramming their DNA, blocking essential functions. An added advantage of this method is that the cancer cells die in a way that spares the surrounding healthy tissue. In results of a small early-stage study published on September 10th, in Cancer Medicine, a journal, a drug developed from Hamlet reduced the size of 88% of tumours in bladder cancer patients with no side effects, other than discomfort at the injection site. Results in mice with brain and colon cancer are also promising. It is not only the molecules in breast milk that could have health benefits. Until about 15 years ago, says Dr. Azad, it was assumed that breast milk was largely sterile. But genetic sequencing tools have revealed it contains a wide variety of bacteria. Some, such as Bifidobacterium, a particularly beneficial bacterium that feeds exclusively on HMOs, can survive the trip into the baby's gut. Where it strengthens the gut barrier, regulates immune responses and inflammation, and prevents pathogenic bacteria from adhering to the lining of the gut. That makes it an ideal candidate for use in probiotics, live bacterial supplements used to remedy the gut's ecosystem. The immune-boosting properties of bifidobacteria are now being explored in patients of all ages with compromised immunity. Prolacta Bioscience, a biotech firm in California, is conducting a clinical trial of one subspecies called B. infantis. Combined with HMOs in adults undergoing bone marrow transplants for blood cancer, a procedure that wipes out the immune system. There is some evidence to think this might work. In a small trial in 2019 at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital, breast milk given to children aged 0 to 5 years after a bone marrow transplant reduced infections and other complications. Because bifidobacteria feed on HMOs, the sugar molecules could help beneficial bugs proliferate. That in turn can help patients with impaired gut microbiomes, such as those with IBS. Recent trials of HMOs as therapy for this condition, though either small-scale or lacking control groups, have suggested that they are safe, well-tolerated, and can improve symptoms. More definitive trials are underway. Other exciting results have emerged from studying breastfeeding itself. When babies breastfeed, some of the milk ends up in their nasal cavity. It is possible, say scientists, that it could then make its way into the brain. In a small study in 2019, doctors at the Children's Hospital in Cologne nasally administered maternal breast milk to 16 premature babies with brain injury. The babies subsequently had less brain damage and required less surgery than those who did not receive the treatment. Similar results were reported in May by researchers at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto. In a small safety study, they administered intranasal breast milk as a preventative treatment for brain hemorrhage in premature babies. 18 months later, babies so treated had better motor and cognitive development and fewer vision problems than those fed only the usual way. Though bigger trials are needed to confirm these results, stem cells in the milk may be repairing some of the damage. It is too early to tell whether any blockbuster drugs will result, but breast milk scientists are starting to feel vindicated. For Bruce German from the University of California, the neglect of breast milk will rank as one of the great embarrassments of scientific history.
And Teresa de Kiersmacher apologizes after bullying accusations. This article is by Alex Marshall and read by an automated voice. New projects from the star choreographer and Teresa de Kiersmacher are always highly anticipated. But with her dance company touring Europe, a cloud has hung over her. In June, more than 20 former dancers and staff members in her company, Rosa's, said de Kiersmacher had bullied and body-shamed employees and endangered their health by ignoring COVID-19 rules. Speaking anonymously to the Belgian newspaper De Standard, they said that de Kiersmacher ruled the organization in an authoritarian way. That approach might have been commonplace in the dance world of the 1980s when de Kiersmacher came to prominence, they said, but it was no longer acceptable. She can really make you feel like you're worthless, a dancer said in De Standard. On Tuesday, during a lecture in Ghent, Belgium, she gave her first public comments about the complaints. I embrace the idea that the leadership style that people expect today involves more open dialogue and more awareness of and respect for everyone's limits, said De Keersmacher, 64, according to a transcript published Thursday on her company's website. I want to offer my apologies to all the people I have disappointed and hurt, she said. A spokeswoman for De Keersmacher declined an interview request on Friday and said the company would not comment on specific accusations. After De Standard published its investigation in June, Roses issued a statement that said, "Healing conversations, which we are always willing to have, must take place in a safe and confidential environment where there is room for nuance and empathy." The company was introducing a well-being working group, the statement added. In recent years, a series of scandals has rocked the dance world in Europe and America, with stars and company leaders increasingly being called out on charges ranging from bullying to ineptitude to sexual harassment. Philip Thielens, the culture editor at De Standard, said that the accusations against De Keersmacher were part of a new wave of accountability. That wave has also crashed over another prominent Belgian artist with whom De Keersmacher has collaborated, Ivo van Hove. Last month, the International Theatre Amsterdam cut ties with him after an official report said that a culture of fear had developed under his leadership. Van Hove and De Keersmacher worked together on the 2020 Broadway revival of West Side Story. Since performing her first solo, Violin Phase, in 1981 in New York, De Keersmacher has gone on to become one of the world's major contemporary dance makers. Initially known for creating formally rigorous dances, filled with repetitive movements, she is now widely admired for her diverse work, including pieces set to music by John Coltrane and Joan Baez. Critics have described recent dances as ecstatic and freewheeling, noting that they entertain audiences as much as challenging them. Thielens of De Standard said De Keersmacher was the godmother of contemporary dance in Belgium, where her influence is broad. In addition to Roses, she founded PARTS, one of the country's leading dance schools. Both are supported financially by regional governments. De Keersmacher had long had a reputation for strictness, Thielens said, but rumors of something more serious at her company began only last year, after Hans Gale, a former Roses publicist, posted on social media that he had left the company because he was unhappy with the leadership. Gale said in an email exchange that during his 10 years at Roses, De Keersmacher was very controlling and unpredictable, which intensified during the COVID-19 pandemic. De Keersmacher was a COVID skeptic, Gale said, adding that she refused to get vaccinated, making it logistically complicated to organize tours and performances. De Keersmacher refused to wear a mask properly when government regulations required it and expressed annoyance with the company's mandatory safety protocols, Gale added. De Keersmacher did not take into account that it was a very stressful, scary period for everyone and made no effort to make it feel safer, Gale said. The Roses spokeswoman on Friday declined to comment on Gale's accusations, but said the company had acted in compliance with local COVID rules. In her speech in Ghent on Tuesday, De Keersmacher said that her company was working hard to build a new, safer and more inspiring working environment. That was an ongoing process, she added. The lecture ended with a riff on Samuel Beckett, "Let's try, let's fail, let's try again better."
So, I feel like I want to remind you of shell space. Take a moment and think of your pace. Float, refresh, stay amazing. Check us out on Instagram. _shell_space. You can print. You can press a link to our web page.